Thank you guys for coming here. I think we did a lot of singing last night, and we're going to do some singing to finish up this whole business in a little while at the fin- at like in about an hour and a half, no, in about an hour. And so I thought we'd do a little bit of stepping back from music, the direct action of music, just to consider. To consider what music is doing and what could music be, which is the question that everybody else is trying to answer in various realms. And what I'd like to start off, if you don't mind, is can we look at this text on page? This is on page 3. This is probably like one of the most famous texts about music that many people have seen before. But I spent the last 4 or 5 years compiling texts and stories about music and just finished putting it all together in a book. And if there's any one text that seems to capture like the dream of music, it might be this one. So I wonder if we could start by first of all just take 3 or 4 minutes and everybody just read the text to themselves, and then we'll study it in Hebrew for a little while, and we'll see what that means about music in general and what it's saying in the world. Okay. I just want to put this in context of some of the other things that are in this little packet, which most of the texts here talk about how people come together around music, around song. I'll actually just stop there. If we wouldn't mind, let's divide into chevrutas, into twos, and we look at this text in depth with each other and figure out what it's talking about, and then we'll report back and talk about what we know. So we'll spend about 10 to 15 minutes asking questions, try to describe it to each other and say, like, what's going on here and so forth. Okay? So let's do that. All this talking that we're doing is never as important as just even like 3 notes.
Right.
But that said, sometimes having an intellectual or an articulated conception of what music is can help us as like a sort of a chizuk when we're singing, to know that it's not fluff. It's something that's we've been talking about for many millennium, we've been dreaming about. Because music is in some ways more of a dream than an actual thing. It's like you can't see it. In some ways, it's like it's always been compared to God itself, right? Which is you can't see it, but yet it's there. And so that's why when they say Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad, they're saying, they use the word Shema, and they say, "Listen, Israel." Listen to the oneness of the world. They don't say look, right? They say listen, And since then, and in the temple with all of the music, and the music's job has always been to lead us towards a place of listening, right? So that we can then hear the divine in a way that we can't find it in, through any other sense. At least this is what the sages say. Okay? I don't know if you agree. Right? And so when we sing Psuke Dezimra in the morning, which means verses of song, right? Mm-hmm. And we sing it before the Shema. As many folks have taught, the idea of Psuke Dezimra is to open up our hearts and to open up our ears. Even it says Zimra, to cut away the nonsense that surrounds our hearts, or that surrounds the husks that surround the divine light, and to cut those away. The Zimra, because Zimra means both to cut and also to sing, right? And so our job is, with the song, is to cut away all that nonsense, so that by the time Shema comes, we're able to actually hear something of the unity that's in the world, at very least to imagine the unity that's in the world, right? That's the essence of prayer, and the song is there to move us towards prayer. And the prayer is there. What's the prayer there for? The prayer is there to move us towards a state of awareness of the world, right? And some say, even the Talmud says explicitly that prayer, where you find prayer, where you find music, b'mkomri nash, you find tefillah. It says you find, where you find song, you find prayer, right? In fact, even the gematria of tefillah and shira are the same, which the Talmud brings up, right? And so our job is that the music is there to create a prayerful sensibility within us, one in which we can hear the nuances of the world around us. Again, the point of music, just to be, in case you're spacing out on every other thing, the point of music is not just not just to make beautiful sound, but to open our ears so that we can hear the beauty and the nuance of the world around us. Okay, so let's see. What did you notice about this text? If you wouldn't mind, could some groups, would one group get started with just telling us what is going on in this text? Or what, and that's what's going on. What's the text at the most broadly saying?
From the particular to the universal.
Okay, so what does that mean?
I was saying to Avishai, it's like the Kohanic vidui on Yom Kippur, the confession, right? He says, me and my house, on myself, me and my house, on the Kohanim, and the Levim and the Kohanim, and then on all of Israel and whatever. And so obviously Rav Kook is taking that to beyond that, from the individual to the nation, to humanity, to all creatures, to all of existence. So it just goes out and out and out, and by the same token, and then it's creating a unity that is the ultimate and powerful and lofty.
Somebody add to that. Nice, thanks. Has anybody ever read Perek Shira? This word it talks about here in the back. It says, "Zehu ha'osek b'Perek Shira." One of the Talmudic era teachers in the very top of the page, the chapter of song. Okay, Perek Shira is this ancient text that's in six chapters. That used to be included in most Siddurim. Mm-hmm. Most prayer books had it. It isn't anymore.
So where is this?
On the top of page 4. And one of the old teachers from the Talmud era said that anybody who reads Perek Shira every day will inherit Olam Haba, you know, mm-hmm. which is what everybody says about everything, right? I love that about the Jewish tradition. Anybody who does anything inherits Olam Haba, but at least it's also said about about Perek Shira. But what it is it's a listing of all of the songs that are sung by all of creation, right? Mm-hmm. So the mountains have a song, and the sea has a song, and the grass has a song. When Rabbi Nachman picked up when he wrote his Song of the Grasses, and all of the animals and all of the birds, everything has its song, and conveniently, most of those songs happen to correspond with verses of the Psalms. Mm-hmm. You know, just it's helpful for us because then we can understand them a little bit. What he's cueing in here, which is that even the ancients, they realized that song is about seeing the songs that come out of the entire world, right? And so this is what Pirkei Shira is about. That's the chapter of song. What else do people notice? Or any question?
There's one question.
Yeah.
So, going back to the beginning, Rav Kook starts with the individual,
yeah,
and then goes into the nation. And I was surprised, and maybe this is just coming from my own context, which doesn't really exist in his, that he doesn't go from individual to community to nation.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered why that was. Maybe he couldn't conceive of or wanted the community to be the nation. But the way we live today, that's not always necessarily the easiest thing to do.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I feel like he's probably going in gradations. There could also be songs of family.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's probably lots of gray areas on the path here, which I think you're alluding to. One thing that's interesting, though, to me is, like, the songs of Am Yisrael, the songs of the nation. You know, like, there's a lot of people who know how to sing Am Yisrael, Hi, Am Yisrael, or something like that. Songs that, you know, like Jewish songs.
My cousin wrote that.
Right, I'm sure.
No, seriously.
Uh-huh, awesome, awesome. Right, I just picked it because it has Am Yisrael.
Yeah,
but, right, and... But very few people know how to sing maybe their own song.
Hmm.
I wonder if anybody in here feels that they can sing their own song. You don't actually have to answer that question.
I mean, but that is the question, is like, what is this music? You know, and also, you know, we know that the Shir Shel Yom, you know, the song of the day. It's like, nobody knows what that was, right? It's unbelievable to me that we could have an oral law being passed down and not an oral musical tradition. And which isn't to say there isn't music that goes back. It's just that we don't know what they were singing. And then the music that we have left is diaspora music, essentially,
mm-hmm,
right? I don't know if anybody's seen, there's this new beautiful music museum in Jerusalem, downtown Jerusalem. Have you seen it?
Yeah,
my husband
beautiful.
Saw it.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the thing that really got me was they have a 3D experience that takes you into the Beis HaMikdash, and then it ends with, after you've spent all day staring at all these instruments on the wall, the band, the Kohanic band, and it's inside the Beis HaMikdash in the corner doing their thing, you know, like performing, and it's just so moving because you were there with them, and then suddenly you imagine you're there and there's no sound.
Because
uh-huh. Nobody knows what that music...
I'm glad that they didn't map something onto that.
No. Oh, right, no, of
that's,
course not.
That's a good choice.
No, no, obviously, by definition, they couldn't.
Leave it as a dream.
They couldn't. I mean, you can sort of imagine, it's a bunch of men, that we know.
No, no, because there are
also,
there are experts,
yeah,
you know, who claim that they know.
Oh, really?
They've even recorded the music.
Huh.
Anyway, I guess just to go, what you were saying about the, like, personal song, that was, like, one of my first reactions to this. If we're taking it as, like, kind of a hierarchy, that, like, the first thing is so difficult.
Mm.
And just, like, as a personal reflection, like, I've been a musician or played music more or less my whole life, and it's been within, like, the last 4 years or 5 years that I've started to play music that I personally like,
And I don't know that that's quite, like, or not, it's not that I like, but that, like, sounds a little bit like what I'm imagining.
Yeah.
And just like that, you know, that, you know, I'm 34, so it, like, took 30 years to, like, start to, like,
right.
see, like, oh, I kind of am now playing something that I feel like is what's inside, and I'm not, like, struggling against physical boundaries or any kind of technical boundaries or
really?
So many
I'm
different
glad.
Boundaries.
Good for you. You're done with technical?
Not done.
No, I'm just kidding.
No, not, right. But that, like, I'm, it was like, I didn't even know that that was what I was hoping for. I kind of thought that that's what I would do my whole life. And that, like, of course I'm going to do that my whole life.
Sorry, what's with that?
To struggle against, like, the technical and the... But I thought I would never get to the point where I was starting to hear, like, what was inside. And
amazing.
So,
and that's... And what it, in and some ways,
just,
it takes that long to even open up. And I also, like, I've been thankful... I've had a chance to write a lot of music in the last bunch of years. But I didn't start writing music until my son was born. My first son was born. And then suddenly, like, music poured out for one reason or another. You know? And, like, I had tried for years to write music, but I never finished anything. You know, it was always, like waiting there, but I couldn't, like, declare it a thing, done. You know? And then suddenly my son was born and I had no time. And so suddenly, like, I was able to write a piece in, like, 3 minutes and say, stamped out the door, you know, and this is, like, maybe my way of giving birth, you know.
Mm.
But,
maybe
you know,
I wanted to
see which ones of these four levels seem the hardest to attain. Because I like how you brought that question up, but I wonder if other people have these. Yeah.
Well, what I found so interesting was that this piece is extraordinarily poetic, and I think the way that all of the other, so there's the one who sings his soul song, and in it he finds all the fullness of spiritual satisfaction, and that is it. That is the shortest of all of the levels. And I find that to be fast, and then the least poetic in its language. If you continue to read all of the other ones, it talks about pure thoughts or luxuriating in hopes or something being a life source and drawing inspiration or the something being full of pleasure and sound and holiness. I would think that if you were capable of actually singing your soul's song, that that would feel far more than just satisfactory.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I think I feel pulled in both ways to feeling like this, then this piece is really not actually about the individual. It's about stating very early on that, sure, it's great to feel oneness with yourself, with your soul in song, but really what's important is actually getting past that. And I think there's something about that around pushing people who I think can get lost in the musical experience inside themselves and pushing them outside of that. I think there's something about maybe some humility there or some piece that maybe it's not about what your own soul, that like it's great to find that your soul song, but it's actually far more about
connecting.
What we were talking about around the inflection points of being able to touch others or experience the satisfaction of others, their soul song into your own. And so I found that to be really interesting, because personally, when you said, I wonder if anyone in this room could sing their own soul song, I think everyone, like, took a collective, like, half, you know, breath, because that feels like quite a challenge.
Yeah.
And at the same time, what this text is saying is, it's great, but get past it, because
yeah.
it's really just satisfactory.
And I want to just push back against that a little bit, and I hear that makes sense, and I think it does seem natural, like, from the way this is set up, that, like, it looks like you're trying to move past, as you're saying, and I like how you're pointing at the poetry of the rest of them, whereas the lacking poetry in the first one, which is...
Well, I think it's like I think it's bringing up a tension point, potentially.
Yeah,
yeah.
And one other way that I see this mapped out is like on the Pardes system of text study, where you have Pshat, what are they? Pshat? Pardes is the four levels of learning a text. One on the bottom level, so to speak, is just knowing the Pshat, the simple... meaning of the text, and then the next one up
remes.
Is remes, which means hint, which means like you get a hint of something of well, we'll get back to hint in a second. And the next one up above that is drash, right? Which is when the established canon is no longer fulfilling the needs or the questions of a generation, then people make midrash. They make they need to expand the canon a little bit, and you know, write new songs maybe, or write new stories, have new ideas that draw deeply on the canon but move out. And then what's the last one? Pardes is sod. And the sod means secret, right? And so the secret level is that which we can't really describe, but it's like the secrets, the divine secrets that that we can only kind of point towards. And sometimes the remez, the hint, is hinting towards the sod level, right? So in music, these things map out in the same way. And by the way, Rashi spent his entire career on pshat. You know, as did Ibn Ezra and many of the great teachers of our tradition, were obsessed with the simplest level, the most, you know, and some were obsessed with the esoteric stuff, but actually none of these levels is given priority. They're all considered essential, right? This is my way of pushing back just a little bit, right? That when you map music onto that too, pshat is, in music, the simple thing is just learning a melody. It's learning how does the melody go? What are the scales that are in this melody? What are the rhythms? How do people sing it? And then remez, if you don't mind me just mapping these out for a second, the remez level, hi, thank you. The remez level is when we start to take those melodies and we sing them together. Okay? So, and why is that remez? I'll tell you. Okay?
But give us a hint first.
Because when we sing together, when we bring the simple things together, and we hear each other's versions of those things at the same time, that's a little hint of the esoteric divine. You know what I'm saying? It's like being together is a clue about what it must be like to be God, who can hear, as it says here, he can listen to the angels and hear 18,000 different worlds all at the same time. If we can just learn to hear each other's voices, it's like a start, it's a hint towards that. Right? And the midrash, the drash level of music is similar like to midrash, which is where you, the established melodies, they're not quite doing what they need to do in your generation or inside of you. So collectively or individually, somehow new songs like emerge into the canon, right? And this happens in every generation, right? And then the sod level of music is what music is ultimately trying to achieve for our neshamas, or what our neshamas are ultimately trying to achieve through music, right? So when I say like when our question is what could music be, music is on all of these levels. It's a pardes, a paradise, of song, right? And so I would contend that actually none of these levels are actually more important. They're all essential. You have to learn a melody. That's the most basic level. And sometimes I just want to get back to the level of just like learning a beautiful melody, you know. And sometimes we get together, but sometimes we're singing in the shower. Right? Okay, so you had something you were going to have.
I was, something Aaron said helped me think about this in a different way, which is that I think they're actually all aspirational. The first one at first seemed to me to kind of be, right, you have to do this, and then you have this fullness of experience. But the truth is to like find your soul song is a totally aspirational exercise. And then the one about Israel kind of talks about pain, the pain of her pain, but is more mostly about kind of, you know, crafting and kind of these things that we can try to find. And so it was just interesting, like I think also like when I think about kind of to what you said before, the one thing we should take away from this session, that the way I heard it, like, music is here to open our ears to the beauty of the world around us. And I think it's also, like, not just to the beauty of the world around us, maybe, but also to kind of, like, what, even just what there is around us. Like, right, I think of, like, protest songs or, you know, long tradition of social justice and music and how those things play together. That I have a friend who works for a music union, and he was posting on Facebook that, like, he was sad that, like, in the protests he's been going to, there was no music. Like, where has the music connected to social justice and activism come to, right? That it was in the 60s, and his experience wasn't there where, at the marches he was going to.
Let's do something about that.
Come to Boston.
You've
got music in
So he was in Philly, so maybe it hasn't come to... He brought it with him to Philly, but he was noting it. And so I think, you know, kind of, I'm sorry. Yeah, my goal. Yeah.
Just took a guess based on
right. Well, right, there aren't that many of them, right? So, you know, it's just struck me of kind of like, I know for me personally in this moment in time, I've been feeling like I need more song in my life, and like, how can I like invite 20 people to come to my living room and just like, let's just sing. And I sing classical choral music, and so I also have, like, I've been singing in this choir since 1994. We sing, like, the full orchestra and, you know, Brahms, Requiem, like, that kind of thing. But, like, we rehearse on Tuesday nights, and so, like, the Tuesday night after 9/11, we gathered with another choir and sang the Fourier Requiem, like, as a requiem, right? Like, it's kind of, like, the power of helping us to, like, be in broader humanity really just kind of struck me in all of these pieces of the aspirational aspect of it.
Yeah, that's so nice how you see it, because aspiring means that what we're really doing is dreaming. You know, and I feel like the entire religious path, the entire spiritual path is a sort of a dream. You know, one that we're trying to enact, that it's an aspiration, where we're trying to make it what it could be. And so music is like that. And it's not there unless we do it. Unless we gather those people. If there was any takeaway, please gather people in your living room. That's probably better than the philosophy.
Right, and I think that it's better than the philosophy also because, like, part of what struck me both when Aaron was speaking and also when Julie was speaking is that actually the way this is written is as an individual, right? Like, it's each person needs to make this journey by themselves, right? You're trying to connect to the nation or connect to humanity, but it's your song. I mean, like, you are singing it, and it's in the singular, right? And I wonder if that also gets to Nina's point about, well, where's the community, right? Because the way, at least, that he's imagining this is, like, this is your personal journey, even though there are all these layers, it's still your... so this is a journey that you are taking as an individual to connect to these different realms, but it's as a single person. And then also something that struck me is that it's through, I guess it's written as, you know, your song and you singing it and not, and I'm wondering how people feel who are both voice musicians and you know, using instruments other than your voice, like, what is that, how is that experience different, you know, using external instruments to sing your song?
I really liked what you said, and that we were also talking about how it's about the individual, and, like, one of the other things that we noticed also was that another way of the progression is that, like, the first piece is that you're it's about connection, and that the first piece is connecting to oneself, and then the second and third pieces are about connecting to an external source, but the nation is about taking a private part of oneself and putting it out into the open, and the third is about being filled through music from externally inward. And then the fourth is seemingly the union of all of these, that, like, the sort of ultimate space of connection. And it's interesting, one thing I feel like is interesting is that, like, that the connecting of, like, putting out and taking in our separate acts that need to be learned sort of separately, which is interesting, but then we also cheated and looked at the second source. And so, like, looking at the individual... and saying, like, this is, you know, a journey to like get to the highest level of one's own voice, and the way that that can connect one to oneself and to the greater, and that the second source says the only way to reach the highest level of one's voice is to sing with another person, and so like bringing those together also can maybe be a nice twist on the community piece.
Yeah, by the last one, by this level of uniting in Kol Olamim with all the Briot, with all the worlds, and with all of existence, and with all of the creatures of the world, you're almost losing yourself again, you know, into this wide range of song that's happening. And
I just have another thought, which was this idea that we've been thinking about, because of the way that it's written, the one who sings as if that's... So, sorry, I was thinking about there's the one who sings his soul song as if that is himself or a person singing their song by themselves. But there's nothing in that language to... Like, it's possible that someone's soul song could be a song of many voices. It's just written here... As if, and then there's a set of progressions that makes you think that maybe you were alone at the beginning, and perhaps later on are connected to others. But I think there was just something about what you just said about how it all eventually comes back together. And I guess I think a lot about song being something that both has to be that you have to do yourself, but also eventually have to hear. The experience of hearing yourself sing is different than the experience of hearing others sing around you. I think that's one of the more powerful pieces about singing in communal spaces is that there are moments when you just stop singing, but the sound continues because not everyone stopped singing at once. You might take a breath, but the song continues. So there was something about how it seemed like maybe that first line was was someone by himself, but it's very possible that that's not true. That it's whatever your soul song is your soul song, and then you're singing the song of a nation, which is going to be influenced by others. And then a song of the universe, which is going to be influenced by the universe. But it's quite possible that your soul song is influenced by one person or two people. Or
yeah.
I just thought that was interesting.
Well, this is so nice. We actually have to finish. So thank you so much for showing up. I feel like we could actually, there's another few hours, just actually a few years or our whole lives just to think about this one piece. So maybe we can have the same conversation again sometime. So okay, thank you very much. We're going to head back to the other room. And